And, you know, you hear all these horror stories about people getting mugged and people like finding dead bodies and people falling off cliffs. And I'm just like, oh, I need to be part of this.
Welcome to Rated NA, the podcast for the website nerdappropriate.com. And this is episode number 239. And I'm your host, Matt.
And I'm Scott.
And I'm Ash.
And I almost want to say, like, the podcast, like, I feel like it's like the website exists for the podcast now instead of the...
Yeah, instead of the podcast for the website.
It's reversed itself.
Yeah. I think that's accurate.
Yeah.
That's true. I mean, I think the idea was that the website would sort of be the hub for all of our other activities that we do.
Yeah. Yes.
Which, I mean, you know, to our credit now includes streaming because Ash does Twitch stuff. So it's still fairly accurate, I think.
Sure. Yeah, that works. Just funny.
Yeah. It's a thing.
Let's do the rundown.
Okay, so on this week's podcast, we'll talk about what we've been up to, of course. We will review Out There Chronicles, Swiss Army Man, Dex, and the mobile game that everybody's playing right now, Iron Maiden. No, I'm just kidding. We're talking about Pokemon Go. And then in our Nequato, we ask, with the success of Pokemon Go, do you feel as though location-based games are here to stay? If so, what franchise would you love to see embrace the format? I have an answer to this question.
Ooh,
a lot of good answers. We got some good ones.
Yes.
So this week is brought to you once again by Loot Crate, and the July theme, which you have, I think, about a few days or a week at this point to sign up for, is futuristic. This month, blast off into the future with exclusive items from Rick and Morty, Futurama, Mega Man, Star Trek TNG, and Valiant Comics. If you're looking to get a surprise box of goodies delivered from the future!
From the future!
Go to lootcrate.com/ratedNA and use the code RATEDNA for 10% off your purchase. You help out the show, you get a box of goodies, and it's all about you, and it happens to be about us also. So that's great.
Yeah, awesome. If I could just give a quick shout out, because you mentioned Star Trek, I wanted to give another shout out to our friends over at Make It So-So, which is a podcast about the not so great episodes of Star Trek.
Yeah.
So I think they're almost about.
I got a message. Beth from Make It So is actually going to be speaking at an event at Comic-Con.
Is she really?
Really?
She really is. Yes. I'll link the stuff in the show notes. But yeah, she'll be there and she's speaking at an event about her robot science that she shares with Scott.
She did not tell me that. So
she actually will tell us about what she does. Is what you're saying, Ash?
Yeah. She's like gonna tell. She's actually having she's speaking to a large group of people about what she does.
That's crazy. Well, no idea what Scott does. That's great.
I do something different now. But since you brought that up, I want to I'm going to give another plug.
Yeah.
Okay, so we use Audible, right?
Oh boy, yeah.
Audible just introduced a new feature, which I think they called like channels or something like that, and they are, you know, like sort of news stories that are taken from various audio sources on the internet, and it's like news and different formats and things like that. And there is a channel in Audible, I think, called like Sex and Sexuality or something like that. And there is actually a talk from my friend Beth from the Make It So So podcast, who you know, who I actually know IRL, and she gave the same talk about robot relationships at a Smithsonian event, and that was recorded. And snippets of that appear in the podcast. And if you have Audible, you can go to the channels feature in Audible, look for the, I think it's Sex and Sexuality channel, and you can find her podcast about robots.
Huh.
Ooh. Yeah.
So Sex super with robots. Cool.
What channel is our show in? Dumb and Dumberer?
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't think we have any content that Audible has picked up at this time.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Unfortunately. Maybe another couple thousand hours of stuff.
I don't think anybody else is talking about Pokemon Go right now.
you don't think so?
It's an exclusive.
I told you guys this offline, but I'm pretty sure that a very popular gaming blog posted no more than 17 stories to their website at the time I counted.
That's darn nerd appropriate.
Yeah. It was us. I'm sorry. But like, that's absurd. 17 articles. Like, come on.
You got to get them clicks, man. Them clicks pay the bills.
I don't care what game it is. You don't need to post 17 articles about the same topic. That's ridiculous. Post them all together. Like, come on.
Yeah. And I'm sure they all have like, they're all 10 pages long for each article. Like, keep clicking through this shit.
Yeah.
You know, we couldn't put it on one page. It's got to be 10 pages.
It's like the galleries that every time you click, it loads new ads on the page.
Yeah.
Those are my favorite.
Yeah.
There was a,
I feel like Scott's got some shit to get off his chest. Do you want to go first on what you've been up to, Scott?
Oh, sure. I was just going to say there was a, I think in this most recent season of South Park, they kind of take a stab at internet advertising, and it's pretty on point, if I do say so. Something I wanted to mention about what I've been up to that I think I forgot to mention a long time ago is that I, during an Xbox sale, I picked up a 360 game called Mutant Blobs from Outer Space. And it was, I basically just bought it on the art alone and the fact that it was sort of like a puzzly platformer game. Uh-huh. And it turns out that it's actually a game from Drinkbox, who are the makers of Guacamelee.
Oh, nice. Oh. Yeah. Those guys are great.
Yeah. So if you're, I mean, not that there's any shortage of, you know, puzzle platformer games, but if you like sort of the aesthetic of a game like Guacamelee, Mutant Blobs from Outer Space is also very good. And it's really just funny and ridiculous. It's just a really fun, fun game to play, and it's backwards compatible. Let's see. I've also been, I played a game called Dex, which is a PC game that came out last year, but recently came to Xbox One. And I'll talk about that in the reviews. And then I'd also like to talk a little bit about Out There Chronicles, which is the, you know, we talked a lot about the roguelike game Out There, which was like a big, mm-hmm. awesome mobile game from a couple of years ago. They released sort of like an interactive comic or a game book, whatever you want to call it. And that came out this week, and it's really good.
Nice.
And yeah, it's I can't wait to talk about it. It's so good. And then obviously there were sales this past week. Did you guys get anything from Xbox sale, Amazon Prime Day, any of that crazy stuff?
I got some stuff at Prime Day, but it was nothing that Socks. Was actually a sale. Yeah, I got clothes. I'm not kidding. I'm like,
oh, really?
I really need like some new pants.
So yeah.
Bought some pants, and I bought like, I don't know, like a jacket or something like that.
Yeah.
I bought some cool shit, and it's a surprise for m'lady.
Oh.
But I'm so confident that she doesn't listen to this podcast, nor is she home right now. I'll say them openly at the moment. I got I just blanked on what they're called. A GoPro. I got a GoPro.
Oh, nice. Yeah, yeah.
But the little cube one.
Cool.
That's like really nice. Super
Can we talk for a second about our wives not listening to the podcast?
Sure.
There have been guests that I've like gone after that I've mainly gone after because my wife is like a huge fan and I wanted her to think I was cool, and she still didn't listen to the podcast after we had the guest on.
I want to say Melissa listened. Yeah, okay. Melissa listened to one of them, and I don't remember, like, literally one episode out of whatever 240 whatever we've done. She has listened to a single episode.
Yeah.
Which is great.
Yeah. I mean, if since this doesn't sound like it's going to happen, we actually went after some of the actors from Grimm to try to get them on the podcast, and that hasn't happened yet, but same idea. Yeah. That would have been for us for sure.
Well, no, I mean for you specifically.
For me, but you know, but for,
you're trying to sell this on your wife right now. Ash was doing that clearly for you.
Oh no, it's for both of us. I mean, it would have been for both of us. Yeah. I'm not lying. But I'm just saying, you know, like, it's the things that we do, right?
I don't try to do anything. That's cool. So the stuff I got was like, nothing was like super sale, you know? It wasn't like Black Friday, like free toaster ovens, they were doing like deals. So like the GoPro deal was you got like a free memory card and like a carrying case and a little kit along with the GoPro. And then
those accessories are expensive.
Yeah. And we've been joking about like messing around with one around New York, and then we're going, it'll come in time for SDCC so we can take it to Comic-Con and mm-hmm. see what we can get out of that.
Nice.
And then I got her a new, I got us Fitbits a long time ago.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, she did not want. at all. She was like, I don't care. I'm not going to ever wear it. I don't, what am I going to look at? How many steps I took? And I was like, I don't know. I think it's interesting. You know, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I rarely wear mine anymore. I forget it all the time. The moment I have to charge it, like, I just don't wear it for 4 weeks.
Yeah.
She wears it, like, religiously every day and is, like, awesome. So into the statistics and stuff. So I'm just saying I'm right. And then, so I'm getting her, I got her, but the band broke. And she was saying she wanted one that has the time on it. And they've got this, have you seen the Fitbit? It's like Alta or Area.
It's like the new model, right? Yeah.
It's like the fancier one. It's like thin, but it says the time on it and shows your steps. Like it gives you like information on the screen.
Yeah, so yeah, yeah.
They were doing a deal on that where you got like a free band. Like, so you could get like two colors and and like $20 off or something.
That's awesome, man.
And then I was like, I realized I don't have I didn't previously have an Amazon rewards card.
Yes.
And I was like, oh, you get like $50 off your first order.
Oh, yeah. It's pretty good deal, especially if you're a Prime person. You should do all your shopping on Amazon.
Yeah, and you get like 5% back. I was like, oh, I'll get that. So this is an ad for Amazon. I don't know why I'm going into that. Yeah. But anyways, I got an extra $50 off. So that was like my deal, my real deal. I got like a bunch of free accessories and an extra $50 off. So I got those two things.
Nice.
And then I think we talked about before, but I bought the Marvel's Avengers, Lego Marvel's Avengers.
Yeah. Any you guys pick up Red Dead?
I can't justify anything right now, man. I've got so many games to play that like adding to the pile seems same. Ridiculous.
Especially replaying something that, you know,
yeah.
is a huge time sink. Like going back and playing something like that again would be really, and it's not even a remaster. It's just playable on Xbox One, you know?
Yeah. And I mean, the sale was only on the game and did not include, you know, any of the paid DLC or the zombie expansion. Right. So I didn't think that was like a super killer deal, you know?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
Obviously the prices on the copy of the physical game have doubled or tripled, you know, since it became backwards compatible. Like you would have to pay like $35 for the physical game now. But you know, I ended up getting the Watch Dogs during the Xbox.
Did you pick it up?
Yeah, because it was, you know, there's no Assassin's Creed coming out this year, so I figure I can budget that into the space that was.
You gotta get your collection on, man.
Yeah, yeah. I gotta get my 245 collectible items in the city.
Have to say the collectibles in Watch Dogs are pretty cool because you hack into people's cell phones and into people's like webcams and stuff, and you can watch little snippets of their life like a creep. But some of the little stories that are told, like through looking at people's webcams and stuff, are the most interesting things in the game. So
yeah,
that level of collection is actually
pretty
neat.
Always sort of interested in playing the game. I just, you know, with Assassin's Creed coming out, it was never the right time to play it.
Yeah.
So now I want to play
it. I did buy something else.
Oh, what's
that? I totally forgot. I got Disney Infinity 3.
Nice.
Ooh, yes.
Because I have the Ash for Christmas got me some of the Star Wars figures.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't use them in 2.0, so, which is what I had. And it was on sale. It's like $15. So.
Oh, jeez. Yeah. That's totally worth it.
Oh, yeah. Man. Yeah. So many of those figures now are like on clearance, too, if you can find them. You know what I mean? So
yeah,
if there's something that you do need.
I need the home base because I never bought the kit. All I have is the Avengers one. Does that do anything? I don't remember.
If you have the actual base where you put the figures on, if you have it from any version, it'll work.
When I have the base, I meant the I have the Avengers Tower that you can put on that one spot that's not round.
Oh no, that'll just let you play like the Avengers set.
Oh, okay.
So like you'll get the Star Wars set, I'm assuming, with the 3.0 stuff, and then you'll be able to play with all your Star Wars toys.
Cool.
It's good.
Nice. Let's see. Have you guys played Inside yet? I want to just keep bringing it up because I want to talk about it, and I need one of you to play it at this
point. I'll play it. It looks interesting. I'll play it.
Yeah, I think
I don't know if I will.
I think it's on Steam now. I think, well, Ash, I think I know
it
that
is,
you...
It is on Steam, and I heard it's only 3 hours, so it's something I can definitely, like, if you give it to me as homework, I'll do it.
Yeah, like, I know you don't like these kinds of games, and that's totally fine, but I think, like I said before, if you only played one of them, you should play this one.
All right.
Just because I think it's pretty good.
I believe you.
Thanks, man. The last thing I wanted to bring up was if you have the, what is it called, Uplay client on the PC, which is kind of like Steam, but Ubisoft's PC client, they are celebrating their 30th anniversary by giving away some free games over the next couple of months. And so it's not tied to the month of the year specifically, but like, I think when E3 ended, they released the first game, which was Prince of Persia, I believe. And then starting just within the past couple of days, the game that they are offering right now to anyone that uses the Uplay client is the original Splinter Cell, which I think is really cool.
That is
so
cool.
Yeah, so all you have to do is just launch Uplay and sign in with your Ubisoft account, and you can get Splinter Cell for free, which is the original, which is still really, really good in my opinion. And I think that's it for me. How about Matt? What's going on?
Hello.
Hey.
Hello.
I realized after I put in the notes what I have done, the first things I wrote was just TV and movies, which could not be the more generic version of that.
Yeah, what TV and movies?
It's one of those, it's like, we're out of fall TV, we're in the summer, and until this week really, we were kind of in that weird period of like a month or two where just like no TV comes out, essentially.
Yeah.
So I was catching up on old stuff. For a little bit, and then I started. I picked up Brain Dead, which Ash recommended, which is really good.
Mm-hmm.
I'm glad you like it, man.
Yeah. You can totally put the just the fact that Mary Elizabeth Winstead's in it aside, and
I even watched her show Mercy Street, which is a PBS show.
Wow, oh, really? Okay, well, you're ruining the argument.
Okay, sorry.
That this show is good on its own.
No, it really is good. It
has little to do. I mean, she's great in it, but it's not just because of her. It's actually really wonderful. And then, like, Tony Shalhoub's fun in it. I love the two kind of sides of his character that appear, and the head exploding stuff. All that stuff is very, very good. So, so definitely recommend that. And then, yeah, movies were like old junky movies, except for the one we're going to talk about in the reviews, which is Swiss Army Man. Which, do you guys know anything about that movie yet?
I know what it is because I saw Daniel Radcliffe on various late night talk shows talking about it. So I want to hear what you
about it in the reviews because I don't want to ruin anything else about it. Nice. But I've also been just like watching old movie or not old but like crappy movies essentially that I've got. Like Ride Along and Ride Along Too.
Oh man.
Wow. And you guys make fun of me for watching Black Knight all the time.
And Bad Grandpa.
Yeah.
Bad Grandpa and Ride Along. What is going on, man? You're just like, I fucking give up. I'm just going to watch these.
Every once in a while, you're just sitting there and like, you don't want to watch anything. We actually talked about this in Slack because Scott brought it up that. You know, Scott doesn't throw TV on in the background, really. Mm-hmm. Like, if he's going to put the TV on, he's watching something.
Yeah, I need to watch whatever it is.
I'm, like, the opposite. Like, 9 times out of 10, I am doing something else entirely, and I just put the TV on for unknown reasons and just put a thing on.
Mm-hmm.
So I've got all these, like, bad movies that I checked out from the internet, and I'm going to... And I've watched them. This is my rule, is how terrible is the movie, then if I'll rent it or not.
Yeah.
But I had them, and I watched them, and, you know... Ride Along 1, not that bad, actually. It's a watchable, terrible movie. Ride Along 2 is a different pace. I watched Tomb Raider. I played Tomb Raider some more. Still very good.
The new one, right?
Yeah, the new one. Rise of War. Is it Rise of the Tomb Raider?
Rise of the Tomb Raider, yeah. The Tomb Raider Rises.
Yes. Again. And then, have you guys used CISO yet?
No, but I always see that you're on it when I sign into Xbox.
Really? I don't know if I'm using it that much, but...
Well, I mean, like the Xbox app on Windows like always says what you're doing, so I see it, yeah.
Hmm. Hope you don't see everything. And then, so, but
he's watching Ride Along!
Again!
He can't stop!
Look, man, it's got Ice Cube. You can't go wrong with Ice Cube in a movie. It's just ridiculous.
Is there anything Kevin Hart won't do right now?
Kevin Hart's just like yelling essentially the entire movie, and then Ice Cube plays like badass, you know?
Yeah.
And then, you know, it's just great. It's about like, it's basically like Lethal Weapon. It's essentially Lethal Weapon, just not as good as Lethal Weapon. But so CISO is NBC's like all you can eat comedy app, I guess.
Are there like things that are only in the app, or is it just like their shows, or is it competing with Comedy Central's app?
Oh no, there's tons of stuff that's only in the app.
Is it like stand up or what?
Yeah. So they have all their late night shows, like every episode you could want to watch. So they've got, you know, Seth Meyers and SNL and Jimmy Fallon and all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You can watch basically anything. Like, I don't know how far back some of the seasons go. I haven't really delved into that too much because I have Hulu, so I'll watch the new stuff like now.
Yeah.
But and then they have custom made stuff. Well, they have some other shows that they brought in, like the Cyanide and Happiness show. I don't think is exclusive to CISO. If it is, then I didn't know that. But they've got some other like kind of filler shows that they've brought on for watching, Monty Python stuff. It's like anything they kind of owned in the backlog of comedy or of NBC and that like crosses over into comedy.
That's cool.
But then they've done, they've greenlit a bunch of shows that are specific to CISO. So Jonah Ray has one called Jonah Ray's Something America, I think. I don't remember what the full title is. But it's about, it's like a comedic take on Anthony Bourdain's travel show.
Okay.
And it follows Jonah Ray, who actually does go to from city to city. Like he goes to like Austin and Seattle, and it's all in America. And it's really interesting. Like it was funny and like good. It wasn't laugh out loud hilarious the whole time, but if you really enjoy those like travel shows like Anthony Bourdain, it sends them up in like the best possible way, and it's really funny.
Awesome.
And then they've got a comedy showcase show called Night Train, which is actually a comedy showcase that happens here in Brooklyn at a club called Littlefield. And they basically just taped them, and they're like an hour and a half long each, and there'll be like six comedians that showcase on it. Those are all really good. And then we're going to talk about it in a little bit, but they greenlit a show called Harmon Quest from Dan Harmon, which is a D&D show. They have, man, I don't even know. They've got a bunch of just like shows specific to them. There's tons of content, and it's $4 a month or $3 or $4.
That's great.
That's pretty cool.
Sounds good.
So yeah, it's a really good, what I was going to recommend it for. I didn't want to do a full review or anything because I couldn't talk about all the shows with my brain full right now anyways. But like they've got a bunch of really good shows that are entertaining to watch that you can kind of binge in like a couple of days. And for $4 a month, you can kind of like turn it on and off whenever you're in a lull of stuff to watch, you know, like
yeah.
You could throw it on for a month, watch all of Night Train and probably all of Jonah Ray's show. And then you could like turn it off, and then a couple months later turn it on and watch all of Harmon Quest, and like you could kind of bounce in and out of that one, I think, pretty easily. Which is, I'm sure, exactly what they're trying to get people to do.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
Oh, they have another one that Scott Aukerman's wife produced called Million Dollar House Sales.
Yeah.
And it's a fake reality TV show, and Paul F. Tompkins is in it and stuff. They're all really funny stuff, so. Recommend it if you want to $4 a month and watch a bunch of comedy. They've got a ton of stuff. And then if you want to like dive through the old archives of Monty Python and all that stuff, it's pretty awesome. So
cool.
Nice.
CISO. That's why I'm always on it, because it's got a bunch of comedy stuff that's funny.
Nice.
CISO.
So Ash, you're all that's left. There's only three of us.
I know. We usually need to expand our roster and just hire a bunch of like 11-year-olds to do the show.
This will be the whole show, is just what we've been up to.
Yeah.
Plus like 10, 11-year-olds. Yeah.
I'm still playing a lot of Overwatch. I do have some Overwatch specific news. It's actually pretty cool that I think you guys will like, because it's just interesting and kind of weird and technical, and I think you'll like it. So still playing that. I had you know, the actual competitive mode is out, and I was like, I'm going to try and rank myself up. So I like played a bunch of matches and made my way up from level 50 to 51. And then I lost one match and dropped like to 49.
Yikes.
And then it took me like, you know, another bunch of matches to get back to 50. So I'm just like hovering at 50 and too nervous to play competitive anymore, just because it's so hit or miss and that number is so creepy and scary. When not playing Overwatch, I watched the new Voltron series on Netflix, which is a Netflix original called Voltron Legendary Defender.
You liked it, right? You said it was really good.
Dude, it was really good. I grew up with Voltron, and I've always been a fan. My friends and I used to pretend to be the lions and stuff and beat each other up, you know, when we were really little. So it's kind of in my blood, and I was reluctant to watch a reboot, because a lot of times, you know, they take these franchises and they try and, you know, put a new coat of paint on them, and they just don't have the spirit or the quality of the originals, that, you know, that something special that you loved when you were little about the original Transformers series or Thundercats
or Full House
or Full House. But even the Full House did manage to capture the spirit.
No, I actually really like
Full
that.
House.
Yeah,
it really did. And Voltron does the same thing. It's really well acted. The animation is gorgeous. it gives you the whole feeling of being in another universe and these young people having all this responsibility of being in control of this giant robot, the most powerful weapon in the galaxy. And you go on adventures with them, and you know, you get to leave the planet and fly around, and they learn to use the lions. And the thing I think that was really cool about Voltron Legendary Defender is, for the first time, all the lions are actually a little bit different. So, like, one lion can stealth, and one lion can, like, shoot fire, and one lion can, you know, he's just incredibly tough and thick and rugged, and they all do different things. And so, rather than the lions just all kind of being, like, relatively the same, like in the original series, all the lions are very special, and they kind of match up with the personalities of their pilots.
Oh, that's awesome.
But it's really good, man, and I think it's only 10 episodes on Netflix. The pilot episode's an hour long, the rest are 30 minutes, so it's easy to digest. If you're a fan at all of you know, Japanese animation or of you know, just great science fiction storytelling that's kind of whimsical and fun, definitely check out Voltron Legendary Defender. It was
surprising. I never get to talk about this on the podcast? I don't remember.
I think we talked about it right when it came out briefly, but it was just kind of like an in-passing thing, so...
Yeah, it's really, really, really good. Like, yeah. I got all the way through the series finally, and like a few weeks ago, probably. But
we did talk about this.
Really dug it.
I remember we talked about it because we talked about it then in the context of what if it were Netflix that were the
Saturday morning cartoons.
Yeah, bringing back Saturday morning cartoons. Like, what if after this they decided to make X-Men, or maybe they made like a sequel to the Transformers movie or anything.
Yeah, yeah. In that context, I think they do a very good job, because they did a very good job on this one. So
yeah, that makes me excited.
The surprising thing to me was the writing and the acting was good enough that me as an adult could enjoy it, but I could see like Patrick and Baz watching it on Netflix and really loving it.
Absolutely.
Like, it was so fun and action-packed and just good, and like I did really appreciate it. I couldn't remember if the lions all had individual powers like that or not, Ash.
I honestly, it's been so long since I watched the original. I don't remember them all doing like as different things as they do now, or at least being like different, like majorly different sizes. Like Yellow Lion this time is huge compared to the rest of them.
And so did they ever really fight outside the lions? I don't think they did. Did they?
Not like now. Like now they all have like a signature weapon, and it's pretty cool. Like it's very... It's kind of like Power Rangers meets, you know, meets Ultraman meets Voltron now, but in a cool way, you know.
I'm really glad you liked it, because it was something that I saw and I'm like, man, I really hope they make more of these and it does well, kind of thing.
Well, it's kind of cool now, because it's like my middle of the night feeding the kid watch show, you know, and and it's quick and it's just fun and lighthearted, and it kind of gives me that, you know, nostalgic warmth in my chest that it is so nice as an adult. So
yeah. Yeah, agreed.
Other quick things. I watched some comedy on Netflix, which is something I don't do. I know, it's crazy. I just another, you know, middle of the night kind of decision. I didn't really feel like watching something that would I have to stare at. So I'm like, I need to put something on in the background that I can just kind of listen to while I, you know, do stuff. And I watched Patton Oswalt's Talking for Clapping, which is on Netflix, which was great. The standout one for me was Mike Birbiglia's My Girlfriend's Boyfriend special. Nice.
Was it
fucking loved it.
Now, was it a film, or was it a stand-up, or was
it's
it
just like a stand-up?
Yeah, it's just a stand-up special on Netflix called My Girlfriend's Boyfriend. Definitely check it out. He tells his whole set is basically like one big story.
Yeah.
He's
a master at that. It's ridiculous.
It's really, really good.
Yeah.
It's,
he started, we saw him like forever ago. Yeah. We saw him like off Broadway do like a one man show called Sleepwalk With Me, which was like a stand up routine that he turned into like a show. And it was like incredible. And I don't know that there are, I'm not sure that there's any other comedians out there doing comedy in that way, like as a show. Right.
Yeah, it's really brilliant. I was actually, by the end of it, I was kind of moved by it, just because you're interested to see where his story goes. And I don't want to give it away, but it ends sort of on a happy note. And you're like, oh, like, I loved his story that he just told for 90 minutes. You know?
His stand-up is not like just stand-up anymore. It's like, it's an emotional journey. And there's like, it's not always funny. There's like sad parts too. And then there's jokes and everything. That's awesome. I'm glad you liked it. I haven't seen that one specifically, but that's awesome.
Scott and I have been Birbiglia fans. We used to listen to it on tour like forever ago.
Yeah, ever since he was on the, you know, when Comedy Central was like airing that stuff all the time. I think that's how we picked him up.
His first special was like Two Drink Mike, I think, was the one we used to listen to all the time. Mm-hmm. And then the Sleepwalk With Me came from a little bit inside of Two Drink Mike, I think. And then he did Sleepwalk With Me, and then My Girlfriend's Boyfriend. He actually just did another off-Broadway play, which I think might still be running, and I want to try to see. And it's called, like, Thanks for the Jokes, I think. Yeah. And it's a single storyline thing again, where he walks through kind of the joke-telling process through storytelling and stuff. It's really interesting how he takes comedy and kind of twists it into his own thing, which is awesome.
He's pretty awesome.
Yeah. I wonder, maybe you guys can, maybe you have information about this, but I've noticed that there is a very similar way between the way that Mike Birbiglia delivers jokes and the way that Seth Meyers delivers jokes on his show. And I wonder if they write together sometimes, or if they're just really good friends. And so that just kind of happens, you know, as a result of them, you know,
yeah, I have no idea,
being around each other. But if you ever listen, if you ever listen to Seth Meyers' monologues, sometimes he kind of delivers like Mike Birbiglia style punchlines. And I always thought that was, I want to know what the backstory is.
We're totally hijacking your thing, Ash.
Oh, sorry.
He doesn't, it's okay. He doesn't monologue that much anymore. And I really love it.
Like, I think that's cool. He sits behind the desk.
Into his, he's done his like news, his Weekend Update, like personality.
Isn't that interesting how Seth Meyers sits behind the desk and now Trevor Noah stands up to do the Daily Show?
Well, they were saying that Trevor Noah was having trouble doing just behind the desk because he's such a stand-up comedian that like they transitioned him to try standing up and see if that fixes
it. Oh, he's so much better at it standing up. Yeah. Makes more sense. Yeah. Sorry, Ash.
Oh, it's okay.
How did you like the last one though? Because I actually really loved it, and I didn't know who she was at all before I saw.
No, I loved it too, man. I ended up really enjoying it. Ali Wong is a writer for Fresh Off the Boat, and she has a special on Netflix now called Baby Cobra, which is incredibly hilarious. I was just kind of selecting random comedy specials, and this one was kind of front and center. I kind of selected some of the newer ones just to so the topics would be a little bit more fresh. But really good. Like, I loved hearing her story as well. I don't know how much of it was true, but she talks about like sleeping with homeless people and all sorts of insanity. But definitely check it out if you're in for some kind of bizarre humor with Ali Wong. Nice. Really quick about Mike Birbiglia also. He is on Orange is the New Black.
Is he really?
Yeah, he's a character in season, I want to say 2, 3, and 4. So if you like Mike Birbiglia, definitely check out him on Orange is the New Black because he's really good in it.
May I make a recommendation for your next one?
Sure.
John Mulaney, The Comeback Kid.
Yeah?
Yeah, oh yeah.
Okay.
It's fantastic.
I've actually never listened to John Mulaney's comedy at all.
He is another really great storyteller, but because of his kind of voice and the way he looks and stuff, he's very good at self-deprecating at the same time, and it's the Comeback Kid's the newer one, I think. Whichever one's the newer one. I think it's Comeback Kid and New in Town, but I think Comeback Kid's the newer one. Mm-hmm. And it is awesome. And he tells the end story is about him meeting Bill Clinton during Bill Clinton's presidency, and it is amazing. So
awesome.
I'll heavily recommend
it. Definitely check it out.
News.
All right, so our first bit of news is that San Diego Comic-Con is right around the corner and will be happening a few short days after this comes out. And Matt and I will be there, and Scott will not.
Oh, that's okay.
One year, we'll get you out there, man.
Yeah.
We'll tickle your Elmo, so to speak.
Whoa. Is that what you do when you're there?
Yeah, man.
Oh, wow.
No, but obviously this year, it's, you know, every year this thing grows, and it's kind of ridiculous, and there's all these websites devoted to other things going on outside of Comic-Con now, but you know, for those that don't know what the fuck it is the biggest pop culture explosion in the world, and it's all taking place in downtown San Diego. All the studios go there and all your favorite shows go there, and there's all sorts of offsite events like Nerd HQ is still happening this year, and Geek and Sundry and Nerdist have events happening this year, and different game studios have events offsite as well, all happening at the same time. So, you know, even if you don't have a ticket, you can still go and enjoy yourself pretty much endlessly. I mean, really, you could go and just wander around and never have to go inside and have a good time. But so we'll be there and covering the event in one way, shape, or form. So we are going to be doing some interviews out there. We're going to have some old guests coming back for some surprise appearances, and more info on that later. And we'll be running around recording stuff and doing what we do every year at Comic-Con. And it's exciting. And there's a lot of really cool shit this year.
Awesome.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the next bit of news was our pal Kate Dollarhide, who is a frequent host on the show, got a piece of writing in a, what would you call it? A magazine, I guess. Is
it's a quarterly.
Called? A quarterly. Yeah. Called Lamplight Magazine.
Yeah. Nice.
And so I just want to give a shout out to Kate. It's super awesome. It's available on Amazon, but you can go to lamplightmagazine.com to see what formats it is available in. I think you can get a digital version of it as well. So she has a story in the most recent, in the June issue of Lamplight Magazine.
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
We love Kate. She's done some photography for us. She's guested several times. So definitely check out her stuff, lamplightmagazine.com.
Yes.
It was called Galaletta. Galaletta? How do you say that?
Here's what I was thinking. We should each attempt to pronounce this word. Galaletta. She clearly has a higher level of knowledge than we do.
Yeah.
And she can tweet us which one's correct. I'm going to say Galadia.
Galadia. Oh. That's probably correct.
Oh, I was going to say Galaletta.
I'm going to say Galati.
Galati.
Perfect.
In Galati. Parallel.
Anyways, what did you say, Matt? What was the right way? Galadia?
That's what I said, was Galadia. Okay,
let's go with that. Galadia in Parallel is the name of the story in Lamplight Magazine.
Nice.
Yeah, so she got published. Check it out. Pick it up. I think it's awesome.
Cool.
Man, published. That's awesome.
Yeah.
It's good stuff. I have Overwatch news. I know you guys are riveted. I'm going to tell you about it. I'm going to tell you about it because I'm freaking excited. This is my 25th attempt to sell this game to you guys.
Oh my God.
Let me tell you this. Okay, no, so there is something really cool that's happening. They're obviously doing a number of changes to the game all the time because it's, you know, a competitive hero shooter, and so they have to keep everything balanced and fair. But one of the things that they're doing that's really cool is they're introducing new heroes to the game all the time. And the first one, well, actually all of the heroes are going to be free forever, they said. So you're never going to have to pay, you know, any sort of fee to get your hand on these heroes. And the first one, there's a lot of things about the first hero that they're introducing called Ana. And Ana is not out quite yet, but she's playable on the public test realm. So you can go hop on and check her out and, you know, play with her against human opponents on the test realm. But the thing that I think is really neat about this character is she is a support class, which means she's, you know, not a frontline fighter, not a tank, but she's a support sniper. And it's the coolest thing ever because she's a sniper healer. And it's something I've never seen in a video game before. And Blizzard pulls it off so, so incredibly brilliantly. So you can hang back with this character and snipe, but if you snipe an ally, it'll heal them. If you snipe an enemy, it'll hurt them. And she also has a number of different attacks that kind of complement that. And the thing that I think is really interesting about this game is the fact that all these heroes that they're introducing, they're all kind of archetypes taken from different games and modified to make them interesting and different. And
yeah, I was gonna make a joke about this, but my real question was like, I've seen a female sniper in a game before.
Right.
You know? So, like, what's the deal?
Special?
Well, on the surface, it seems uninspired. So you can tell me how it is inspired.
Okay, so like I said, she heals with her snipes, which is very different. Mm-hmm. And also, she's a 60-year-old woman.
Oh, okay.
Which I think is super cool.
That was not apparent from the artwork, so I get it now.
Yeah, so she's like this old, kind of weathered, she used to be a member of the Overwatch team like a long time ago. She got a terrible injury and kind of, you know, fell out of the scene and is now just coming back. And it's very interesting because she's, you know, she's the mother of another major character. And so you have this matronly, you know, elderly hero that you don't really see too often in video games as a playable character or protagonist. Ooh, so
okay, that's pretty cool.
I think it's really neat. So I just think I think it's brave of them to introduce characters like this. It's different. A lot of the characters that they have that are playable in this game are older people, like, you know, 50s, 60s and beyond. And they're all different body types. You know, they have larger people, they have, you know, bodybuilders. It's just neat that they're actually kind of exploring and kind of breaking out of the mold of what you typically see in games like this, you know, with the super huge muscle bound heroes. So I just think it's really neat. And I did actually hop on the playtest realm and check her out. And super fun, man. You wouldn't think that healing as a sniper would be, you know, all that entertaining, but it really is because you still get to.
She doesn't do damage at all. She just heals with her.
No, if you aim at an enemy, you'll actually do damage to them. But if you aim at a friendly, you'll heal them. So
is she like a nerf sniper in some way that when Do you know what I mean? Like, is like a straight up sniper more powerful than her?
Right. Yes, she is. So her bolts do, you know, significantly less damage than like the other snipers in the game. But you can heal, right? And she also has a couple other abilities that like lend healing to other allies. She can put people to sleep with like a tranquilizer dart. So she's a controller and a healer at the same time, kind of fills a role that doesn't exist in the game right now.
That's cool.
But really, just like a super fun character to play. And it's one of those things where, you know, they keep all, like I said before, all the characters that they've introduced thus far are all really fun to play as. So I'm interested to see, you know, where it goes next. But anyway, that's the bit of Overwatch news this week. There's a new hero coming out and she's a 60-year-old woman. So
cool.
Yeah.
Ash, something I thought you might be interested in is that Loot Crate has a Gears of War 4 themed box.
Oh man.
Did you hear about this?
I saw a tweet about it. I did not open said tweet because I did it, just kind of glanced over it.
Oh, okay. Well, I think this is interesting, and here's why. Because they've done crates in the past for like Mass Effect and for Nintendo Amiibo, and they've been doing a series of special like Firefly loot crates. And what I think is interesting about this one is that you can actually get the Gears of War 4 loot crate with a digital game code with the loot crate.
That's actually pretty cool.
Yeah, and I think it's different for Loot Crate, and I also feel like it sort of turns the idea of the like special edition game on its head a little bit, right? Because, you know, typically the special edition of a game will come with, you know, some artwork and maybe like a statue or something like that. But in this case, you don't really know what you're getting. And so you're also not buying, you know, when you buy those editions, you're buying the game plus bonus items. But with this, you're buying unknown items with the bonus of a game. So economically, it's sort of like, it's a different way to wrap your mind around what it is you're buying, actually.
Right.
And I just thought that was a really interesting thing. You know, I wanted to bring it up since we talk about Loot Crate on this show, but I also wanted to bring it up just because they're including the option to get a digital code for the game. I think even at a like sort of a small discount over what you would pay for it at full retail. So I don't know.
I think it's cool. I mean, I like their specialty crates. I got the Aliens one. I've gotten the Comic-Con ones in the past.
I got the Mass Effect one. I really liked it.
Yeah, I mean, it's neat, especially, you know, when it caters to a specific franchise that you are a fan of, you really can't go wrong unless you have like a ton of the crap already, which was like one of the problems I had with the Aliens crate is I already had some of the stuff that it gave me.
Yeah.
It is in different form. Like it came with like a hardback graphic novel of some of the Aliens comics, which I own all the Aliens comics. So I was like, oh, more Aliens comics.
Yeah.
But, you know, if you are a more of a casual fan of a franchise, you might not just have, you know, tons of the crap. So,
yeah, I think this is also an interesting way to do like special edition games. Obviously you can buy the crate without the game code, but the only thing that you know for sure you're getting in here is a 7-inch Lancer replica. And if you pre-order early, you get a 2-inch Golden Lancer pin.
Yeah.
And then there are some bullet points about things you would get, you know, some hints about what might be in the crate as well.
See, I was the asshole that bought the actual Lancer, the full-size one that is on my wall. So hey,
that's respectable. It's okay.
You know, sometimes you just got to be that asshole.
Yeah.
Hey, that's buys all right. The big dumb thing.
You're the Gears guy. You're like, that's kind of your jam. So
yeah, I'm excited. I mean, I don't know if I'll get the crate, just because like you just said, do I want a fucking 6-inch Lancer when I have a full-size one on the wall?
It's true.
You know, like, I don't know, but, the thing I do like the code is, it is one of the, cross compatible codes. So Windows 10 and Xbox One, they work back and forth and share a save. So that's really neat.
Yeah. Yeah. So like some of their games that are coming out, like I think what they mentioned is that going forward, most of the, titles published by Microsoft, if you buy them digitally, you will get access to the game on Xbox One and on Windows 10, which I think is called Play Anywhere. And it kind of goes into that idea of Xbox becoming more of a platform than it is a piece of hardware. So that's cool too.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I just wanted to bring that up because I thought it was interesting to think of it in the sense where it's like, oh, I'm not buying the game. I'm getting the game as the bonus instead of buying the game with, you know, with the stuff as the bonus, which is, I think, could be sort of a turning point in how we do like game sales potentially.
I think the days of like going to the GameStop and getting your physical copy are starting to disappear, which
but I'm saying like kinda happy. you know normally you would go, you know, look at Fallout 4, right? There was a $200 version that had a wristband, right? And yeah. So you'd get the game and the bonus thing was the Pip-Boy, right? But imagine if you went to Loot Crate now and it was like, hey, get the Fallout crate, but then we'll also throw in a copy of the game. It's the same stuff, but it's like sold in a different way, which I think is fascinating.
I think it's pretty cool too.
Yeah.
Hey, do you guys remember like, I don't know, 3 years ago when we were like, hey, it'd be fun to do like a D&D show of some sort, and then we never really did it?
Yes.
Yeah.
Apparently, it's like the coolest thing in the world now, so we should have done it 3 years ago, and we were dumb, and we're sorry we were dumb. Yeah. But so if you are a fan of Nerd Poker or what's the one you listen to, Ash? Critical Role. There are new ones coming to TVs near you. One is from Dan Harmon, the creator of Community. If you ever listen to his batshit crazy podcast called Harmon Town, which I love and am going to see live at Comic-Con, actually.
Nice.
They used to do D&D in it. And Kumail Nanjiani would come on and play. And Dan played with his then, at the time, wife and Jeff, the leader. And then there's a guy named Spencer, who was the GM for the whole thing. Well, they've created a show for CISO called Harmon Quest. And it's them playing D&D. And it's got some cool twist, which is... it's shot on a stage in front of an audience and they're playing there where like on a nice table and it's just them playing D&D. It's not actually cut out of the podcast. And then they take segments of the game and animate it. So it's this like 2D fun hand-drawn kind of animation around their characters and the funny stuff that happens while they're playing. And then every week they bring on a special, you know, famous person guest. I think the first one's Aubrey Plaza and I don't remember who else comes on, but they have a bunch of guests coming on to play and it looks funny. And the games used to be great when they played before. We went and saw it live in Brooklyn many moons ago and Jason Sudeikis played for a little bit, which was hilarious because he had never played D&D before in his life and it was funny to watch him play with the crew. So, you know, might be worth that CISO pass if you're bored. And then the other one is from the Nerdist podcast. They have one called Force Gray, which is actually partnered with...
Geek & Sundry?
Yeah, I mean, they're partnered together, but it's partnered with Wizards of the Coast, too.
Ah, yes.
So there's... I don't think they're doing anything different, like animation-wise or anything like that. I've only seen a little bit about it, but it seems like it's Jonah Ray, Chris Hardwick...
Matt Mercer's the GM.
And then I don't remember. There's two other players, and they might have a guest on occasionally,
I think, too. Ashley Johnson. Ashley Johnson's their cleric. I actually did see, like, the first 5 minutes of this.
Yeah.
And so I don't know who the other member was. I can't remember.
So, yeah. So there's two now. If you need to get your D&D fix and, you know, Nerd Poker's over. Is Critical Role still going? Or
yeah, still going. Still going still strong. Going. More popular than ever. That's blown up.
Yeah, so Force Gray and Harmon Quest are the two you're looking for. Force Gray's on Nerdist, and Harmon Quest will be on CISO.
Check them out. Man.
Thought that was interesting news for people that like our show.
It is.
Hey guys, have you heard about this game, Pokemon Go?
No.
No, I remember. Okay, so this came out about maybe a week ago at this point, maybe a little bit more than a week ago. And I remember I sent you guys a message on Slack and I was like, fuck this game. Because I've played a lot of location-based stuff before and it never really works because there's never that many active users. However, Pokemon Go and Pokemon is apparently very popular. I just read a thing today that was published just this afternoon that says Pokemon Go is the biggest mobile game in U.S. history with 21 million daily active users. And the news media is definitely helping that out because,
oh, yeah.
Holy crap, everywhere you turn, there's an article about this. And Scott mentioned, or you know, 17. Gaming sites, 17 articles, major news sites, you know, CNN, Fox, all of them are
stand-up comedians are talking about it on late night shows.
Yeah. Yeah. It's absolutely exploded. And I kind of jumped on the hype train just to see what it was about and actually had an okay experience. Why don't we talk about it with our personal experiences of what it was like playing, Matt? I want to hear your story of what you did.
Well, I was going to say,
I know about this game is that I've heard it described as Ingress with fewer features, mm-hmm. but with Pokemon IP.
So it's made
IP.
By the same team that made Ingress, which Google owns, PS, okay. Alphabet owns, rather. Niantic, who made Ingress, which, if you guys remember a long time ago, was basically the same exact game with just, like, I don't know, 1,000 more things on the screen while you were playing and, like, 57,000 more options of how you're supposed to play the game and a crazy in-depth, like, story that was sci-fi and out there. I think Ingress was a very, not progressive, what's the word, ambitious game for when it got put out. But it basically just drained phone batteries from what I really get. Mm-hmm. So the same team apparently took that tech or some of that tech. We have some theories around the office we'll get into it. We have some theories that they're reusing some of the bits of Ingress inside of Pokemon Go.
Yeah, why not?
Especially data, location data and pictures of things and labels for stuff. Like, we think some of that's coming from Ingress because it happened way too quickly to be just from Pokemon Go.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure.
So yeah, so everyone in my office was playing. Well, not everyone. Like half my team was playing it when I got to the office on Monday, and they're all talking about it. And they were like, one of my coworkers would just like the first meeting we had. He just walked into my office with his phone out, and I was like, "What the hell are you doing?" And he's just like looking around really slow. And I was like, "Are you playing Pokemon Go?" He's like, "Yeah." All right, so. Whatever. So I was like, all right, you guys started talking about it. Then Ash said he downloaded it. And I'm like, fine, I'll download it. I'll give it a shot. I have a different experience, I think, because my office was a Pokestop. And it was a Pokestop that people kept putting lures at. So you could literally just sit in my office and farm Pokemon like all day long if you wanted to. And they just would appear every few minutes. And you could get Pokeballs constantly. You really had to do very little to do anything else in the game. So it was a little weird. I played for like 2 or 3 days, got to level like the early, like level 5, I think is as high as I got.
Yeah.
And then all the stuff started breaking about how I had accidentally given them full access to my Google account. So I removed that and then never went back to the game.
Sounds good.
Yes.
But it was fun. I mean, it was like, I get the appeal, because it's fun to just kind of walk around and like see different locations, and it's taking people to like kind of touring them around. New York is like packed full of fucking people playing Pokemon Go. It's insane. There are like just groups. We went down to the subway on Sunday, and Melissa and I did. We were going to pick up new luggage, and there were just 5 people standing, like not in the subway, but like on the stairwell, on the corner, all playing Pokemon. Just like in a weird group together playing Pokemon Go. Because I assume that was like a place to catch Pokemon or something. I get the appeal. I think it's fun. For me, it's like I lose interest in this stuff insanely fast, and the Google stuff didn't help. But the one positive thing I will leave about this game is that I really, really, really feel like it proves, I think, especially Ash and I, although I think Scott was on our team too, about AR versus VR.
Yes. Like,
borderline, it's like almost the best proof of concept for why AR is interesting and fun and engaging and about more than just you. And like, that to me is like, I'm totally fine with this game being gangbusters if it means that it makes AR more of a thing and VR, you know, can maybe take its place wherever it is, and then AR can kind of more prominent in new ways of interacting with things. So I think that's amazing. It's just the gameplay for me is a little light. I also never ever even sort of or remotely watched or played Pokemon in my life. It hit when I was like 22. So it was like, or 19 probably. What year did it hit? Like 90?
Yeah, it was like 98, 99 maybe, yeah. That it became popular. Yeah.
I was like going into or in college at that point, and just it wasn't like it just didn't hit at a point where I remember, like, I think our friend Adam played it endlessly, and I was just like, I don't understand what this is. So I never, never really got into it. But
so true.
But yeah, so I don't know. That was my experience. I had fun while I did it. It's just not a thing that holds my interest super well. So Ash,
I kind of had a similar exposure to the franchise. Like I did play through the first Game Boy, like Pokemon Blue.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it was actually a really competent, RPG. Like it had a really fun mechanic. Like the battling mechanic was cool and leveling was cool. And I understand why people really fell in love with it. And there is a lot of innovation with the different monsters, and you can kind of see why, you know, this version of it's taking off so much. But, beyond that, the first Game Boy version, I never really got into the franchise because I'm also, of that same age. So I was hearing all sorts of fun stories about it, and that's kind of what got me to download it. Like my Twitter feed for a couple of days was just all these great stories of groups of people getting together and wandering the streets and going on adventures. And you hear all these horror stories about people getting mugged and people like finding dead bodies and people falling off cliffs. And I'm just like, oh, I need to be part of this. This needs to be something that, I have in my memory bank. So, I told Christina about it. And, we have a 2-month-old, so it's hard for us to just kind of like wander the streets. I mean, we could, throw him in a baby carriage or whatever the fuck you call it, but it's also like 100 degrees. It's 100 degrees where we are right now. So we're just like, we're gonna not do that. And we also live in the burbs and there's like no Pokemon around us. Mm-hmm. So we actually put the baby in the car and we kind of did an old fashioned war driving adventure where we kind of cruise the streets looking for Pokestops, and we would hop out of the car and like scan, and it was fun, man. And we started, we started seeing other groups of people doing the same thing, people driving and people walking. We ended up at the complex near our house, or the shopping center near our house, and there's like a gym there, and there was like all these people standing outside of the Outback Steakhouse like poke hunting. And then we like drove to some park, and there's like all these like sweaty ass 12-year-olds at the park like walking around, and I'm like, this is just, it's just fucking neat, because like I'm seeing things in my town where I've lived for a long time that I had never really seen before. And that's part of the appeal, to kind of just get you out and let you see things that that exist in your reality, when in reality, it's the gamification of exploration, which I thought was neat.
Yeah.
And my buddy Mark, who's a cop, texted me about it. He's like, what the fuck is up with this Pokemon? He's like, there's Poke Hunters everywhere. What's going on? and the thing that I told him that it was probably the most like was geocaching back in the day.
Oh, yeah,
like
for sure.
Digital version of geocaching. And I think that's neat that there's 21 million people that are out there just kind of wandering around. And, the thing about this is, with any game, is it fun to play? Like, we haven't really talked to Scott about the mechanic. There's really nothing to this, man.
Yeah, there's almost nothing to
like
it.
you show up at a place, and some places are like marked on your map. If you show up there, you get like prizes like Pokeballs or eggs or whatever. So a lot of places are already kind of tagged, and you can go there to like earn stuff. And on the way to walking to those places, you might see some like little on your GPS that you're walking with your phone, you might see some little like tree bush type things. And that means there's a Pokemon nearby. If he appears, you can throw your Pokeballs at him and you can capture him. Yeah. And then you can go to gyms and you can fight with your Pokemon.
Okay.
And you have candy that you level up your Pokemon with. You can evolve them if you get enough candy of a certain type. And then you get, is it space
dust creds? Or something?
Space dust. I don't remember. And you can like level them up, their powers there. So when you take them to the gym, you can like, level your Pokemon up even more.
Okay.
I've never felt older in my life than when I talk about this game, by the way.
I feel the same way. But it's also like you said, the idea that so many people are interested in AR, and the fact that already this is changing the landscape of video games, the popularity of it, the fact that it's getting so much national news and so many people are playing it. I mean, 21 million people playing augmented reality games on an active basis are more people than have played virtual reality since the dawn of virtual reality.
Oh, yeah.
It's very true.
you know, and that is, and that it means that it has now changed. Like, we don't have to worry about it changing and AR becoming a thing, because it already is a thing now.
Yeah.
Now, whether or not it sticks is a different, you know, a different story, but
it's going to take more. I think Pokemon is a really great fit for this AR. And I think the way, I think, so here's the difference. Here's the main mechanical difference between Ingress and Pokemon. And I kind of alluded to it when I was talking about Ingress. Pokemon is literally a completely empty screen with a Pokeball at the bottom and a map that you walk, you walk around with, and you find the location, and then you click, you can click it. If it's a Pokestop, you click it, and like it brings up an image of the thing that's, it's like landmarking, so you can kind of see what's around you, and then you can look around and see, like, oh, neat, and you see that. And then as you move around the map, like you get, like Ash said, you get little things, but there's nothing, there's no UI really to speak of that you interact with in a significant way while you're doing the majority of what it is, which is walking around and collecting Pokemon, right? Like, it is basically a map most of the time. The gym's different. Fighting, the other stuff is different, but, like, right now it's pretty, pretty bare. Ingress, I'm not exaggerating, like, had a mess of a UI on top of this thing, because it tried to, like, sci-fi up the world around you, sort of.
Oh, okay.
And it had all these like matrixy type things you could interact with and kind of like figure out what's going on and like unlock story points and all this stuff that you had to do. And it was baffling when you were using it. It was very confusing and like hard to understand. And it was almost as if they went, what if we just put one button on the screen and you just walk around otherwise? Like, what if we remove all UI from the game and you're just like a virtual character in a real world? And like, that's essentially what the real mechanic is. And I think that's why it took off on a level, because even me, it took like 3 minutes of my coworker who's big into Pokemon explaining the leveling up mechanics and like how to evolve the Pokemon. And beyond that, it's like, it's not, it's so easy to understand that you find a Pokemon, you tap it, and then you swipe like Pokeballs at it, right? So, like, that's the thing.
Okay, I have some questions.
Go for it.
What is the purpose of the microtransactions in this game?
You buy gold to buy things to level up your Pokemon.
Okay.
Faster, yeah.
Yeah, buy, like, it's just a, it's a speed mechanic.
To lure them and all sorts of... Yeah, it's a speed mechanic.
Yeah, I think I read something today that also mentioned that this might become a tool to get people to do things that are like Foursquare-like. You know, so sure. Like they could put a Pokestop inside of a Macy's or something, and then you have to walk into Macy's and buy or do or see something. So...
I can see that. I will say that the in-app purchases are borderline hidden. Like,
okay,
you have to go like three menus in before you see where you can buy gold.
Mm-hmm.
And they're really not fishing for it. Like, it's not... out of everyone in my office, no one has spent any money on it yet, as far as I know. They're just playing because it's enjoyable.
Okay. And I joked about this on Twitter, but what is Nintendo doing with all of our data?
We don't know, man.
You know what I mean? Because
I saw you launch into some big spiel about it the other night.
Well, seriously, like okay, so they released some free games. Miitomo, all you did was you created an avatar. You basically told Nintendo, you know, you gave them access to your social networks, so they know who your friends are on social media, and then you and other characters answer questions about like stuff, and it'll be like, what's something you did this past weekend that you really enjoyed? Or what do you think is really popular right now that other people should know about? It's like very kind of like very data mining type questions, you know, that they ask you in the game.
Mm-hmm.
And then now with this Pokemon Go, they are basically getting you to go out and do things that are, you know, GPS enabled, and you're around other people and you're traveling around. And so now they have this location data about what you're doing. And then, you know, they've already talked about, I think they're going to do, Nintendo's going to do like an Animal Crossing game for mobile. And I think I want to say that there's something else as well, but I don't remember what the IP is, but it's like, it seems like with these two games, they're getting like a little bit more into your head. And I'm curious about like what is planned for the NX and how all this data goes into it.
I feel like other than the financial success that Nintendo's seeing from this game, I don't feel like they're getting anything out of this. Like, all this data is going to Google, it feels like, because the people who made this is all Google.
Yeah.
This is 100% Google owned, Google built. You know, Pokemon is basically just the brand that they bought to put on top of the... This could have been anything, which is kind of leads to the question that we're going to talk about later. But like, Yeah, I don't know that Nintendo. I just feel like Nintendo's not savvy enough to do
something with it.
Yeah, like that's fair. I feel like Matomo was their way of being whimsical and fun and not at all a data farm. like we're gonna find out that they have like an Excel spreadsheet with that some of that info that filtered into them there, and that's like they're like, oh, I don't know. Like,
yeah, I mean, we'll have to see what the NX is. Maybe it will incorporate some of this information.
Well, did you see there was a story recently where it's like Nintendo came out and said, well, the reason why we didn't want to show the NX at E3 is because we're working on something. Like, they're supposed to launch this thing in May. This thing's supposed to come out in May, and they're still working on stuff.
We'll see. Yeah. We will see.
Yeah, okay.
I don't know. Anyway, I think it's neat. I think conceptually it's pretty awesome. I don't think the gameplay itself is exactly riveting. Exploration's always fun.
They're saying they're going to unlock PvP, right? That's like if at some point the game's going to be, you're going to be able to challenge other...
To actually Poke Battle.
Poke Masters, yeah.
Okay, well, if that's the case, then it's going to keep it going for a while. Because right now, you know, with any of these games, there has to be some sort of reason for the collection and the advancement of like your stuff. Right now, it doesn't exist. So you
can join one of three factions, right? Once you level,
yes,
you can join. I don't know. I'm not
Virtue,
like Virtue, Whimsy, and something else.
I don't know. Pokefans are going to be so mad at us.
I'm not even trying to make fun of it. I just honestly don't remember it, and it's three things that I didn't even know were things. I was just like, oh, okay, three groupings. But is there anything to that once you've joined a team? Because I didn't get that far. Did you join?
I did not get that far either.
Okay.
So I've played for maybe a total of 2 hours, and I'm like level like 4 or 5, so...
Well, I'll find this information out and I'll bring it to us later because everyone in my office, everybody on my team is playing.
You can bet everyone on the planet is going to be playing at San Diego. And that's,
oh my God.
Well, I was going to ask you guys, like, what do you think this is going to do to like SDCC and PAX? Like,
you're just going to be able to run and slap phones out of people's hands.
Yeah, I was going to say, let me tell you what's already done to New York, which is like congest an already congested walking town. Like, there'll just be people who just stop moving all of a sudden in front of you and then you realize what they're doing. And like that's where I get infuriated with the game, which is like when I'm trying to go to work and somebody's like walking in front of me and then just dead stops and holds their phone up into the air like it's like praying to somebody all of a sudden, and I just want to be like, get out of the way, step to the side, and no one ever steps to the side. It's terrible.
The other thing
that's going to be all of SDCC essentially.
Yeah, I mean the other thing about this too is that I mean I know this is not the same thing as Miitomo, but that became pretty stale after about 2 weeks, right? So I wonder in a month or 2 months how many people are going to still be playing this.
Except for the fact that I don't think the take-up on Miitomo was as high or as fast as Pokemon.
Oh, no, it was not. But a lot of people like wanted it when it was first released.
Yeah, I think a lot of people wanted it, and then I think a lot of people just didn't get it, you know? So it was like a harder sale. And then this game, I think, was such an easy sale to everyone, like when your friends were playing. Mm-hmm. That it got taken up by so many people that the attrition on it's going to be, I think, a much longer attrition. Like, if they can get PvP in the next 2 months, they'll probably save the life cycle of this game and it'll probably blow up all over again. Like,
yeah,
we'll see. I don't know, but
true that.
Yeah,
good times. All right, let's hear about Out There Chronicles.
Yeah, so the mobile game that I have been playing this week, and maybe the timing is unfortunate because I'm pretty sure Out There Chronicles came out on the same day as Pokemon Go.
Oh boy.
I've been following this one for a while, so obviously I think we're all big fans of the roguelike game Out There. And for those that don't know, Out There, the original game was a roguelike where you awaken on a spaceship. You're by yourself and you are traveling through a star map. And along the way, you encounter alien creatures and different spaceships and weird planets and all kinds of fun stuff like that. And it has really great atmosphere in terms of the artwork and the visuals, and sort of what you started to get a sense of in Out There is that there is a very big universe to the game. And by universe, I'm talking about sort of the narrative, the background, the story. And you start to get a sense of what that is in the original Out There game. But with Out There Chronicles, they are now beginning to sort of flesh out more stories in the Out There universe, which I think is really fascinating. So Out There Chronicles is, you know, sort of I wouldn't call it like a choose your own adventure, but in some ways it is, because you know, you do make decisions at certain points, and then at, you know, at other times it feels like you're sort of on a path, but you have some freedom to do things with it. But it's, you know, it's a narrative game. It's like a game book or an interactive comic or however you want to describe it, but it still has that same great, you know, aesthetic in the visuals. Like the artwork is amazing.
Yeah. That's probably one of my favorite things just about out there.
Was
just the overall aesthetic. The music was incredible.
Yeah. And oh my gosh, when Out There went to the Omega edition with all of the upgraded visuals, like the game just became, you know, fantastically more improved just from that alone. It was so good. And so Out There Chronicles tells a story way in the past of the original Out There game, but in a way that is tied to our present time. So
interesting.
Yeah. So, I mean, what you learn early on is what prompted humankind to leave Earth in the first place, and sort of how, it tells the story of how like everything shook out and how everything went down, and then kind of takes you up to speed to where things are now. And where things are now are still very much in the past compared to the original Out There game. So you're starting to kind of peel back the curtain on the events that led up to the original game, but it's telling like a really great story just about, you know, obviously the story is focused on, you know, a handful of characters, but in doing this, you get to meet, you know, different, I don't know. It's just, I don't want to spoil too much.
How far are you into this game at this point?
I would guess that I'm maybe 70% of the way through the story, the book or whatever.
And how many hours have you played so far?
I feel like I'm learning that the story is a little longer than I thought it would be for, you know, for what it is. And I would guess that maybe I've played for, I don't know, like 2 or 3 hours already.
Okay. Wow. That's pretty cool. Yeah,
because, you know, the first time this is what I did. So like the first time I played through it, I, you know, obviously I took my time. I was very careful to read everything that was going on. Consider the, you know, the dialogue choices that I was selecting and the actions that I was taking. And, once, you know, obviously a game of this nature, there's a way to sort of like find an endpoint in the story, like basically anywhere in the game, if you make the wrong decisions. Right.
Yeah.
And, this game actually does offer a checkpoint system. So if you want to just sort of continue on, and start, you know, from a section and try it again, you can do that. But
okay,
the first couple times I went through it, I decided that I just wanted to like start over, because once I got a sense of like the story of the game, I decided like, oh, I want to start over. You know, now that I know what's going on, I have a feel for the world and what's happening in the world of the game, and kind of like make different decisions, like based on a different, you know, a different way that I want to portray this character in the game or whatever.
Yeah.
So I think that's where some of the replay value comes from. But then as I started sort of progressing through the game and using the checkpoints, I was sort of surprised at even how long the book was anyways. And and it just like the story starts in one place and takes you, you know, just like you would expect it out there, to a completely different place. You know, like I did not expect the story to go in the direction that it did. And it's just really fun. And if you're a fan of the original Out There game, you know, absolutely play this. If you're a fan of game books, you should play this. And what really makes me excited about playing this is that first, I think it's not just an isolated game. I think they have plans to continue to make these types of games if they are popular.
Right.
And playing a game that's like very heavily story driven like this also gives me a sense that they can tell a lot of stories in this universe. And I think that what they have is really fascinating and can continue to work even if they decide to make different games. Like, I feel like they could launch an entire franchise of Out There games and comics and other things if this takes off in a meaningful way.
Just like a full world kind of like build everything around it.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Because as you see in the original game, there's like different alien races. You have to learn, you know, you're trying to learn the languages, you're taking over the ships, you're managing resources. Like, there's this thing called Omega. Like, you don't know what that is. You know, you don't know, you know, in the original game, they talk a lot about like architects and stuff like that. And you're like, what is happening? Who are these people? Like, what is the backstory? And like, now you get to learn the backstory. And I feel like they have a lot of stories to tell, and that in itself is really exciting. So I highly recommend Out There Chronicles.
I was actually thinking about Out There, and Out There Chronicles fits in this perfectly the other night, because, you know, sometimes I'll go to bed and I have an Apple TV in the bedroom, and I've been wanting like an interesting game for the Apple TV that I can play like at night before I go to sleep, kind of thing.
That's what I play.
And like
too,
Out There Chronicles fits perfectly. I can play. I play it on my iPad sometimes before I go to sleep. I'll just play sitting in bed. But like, there's something about loading up Out There on the TV that seems interesting to me, or like attractive, because the controls are very simple. I could do it on the remote. Even I don't have to have like a full game controller. And it's a slow paced game. You can kind of quit it whenever you're falling asleep and like pick it up the next time you play. And I was like, man, that'd be like such a great thing for them to port it over to the TV. And Out There Chronicles, I think, fits, because that kind of storytelling mode with big, beautiful art would be awesome on a TV, you know?
Yeah, I agree. That'd be great.
Yeah. And I think,
that's cool.
You know, just in the same way, like with any popular sci-fi franchise, like, you know, Battlestar or The Expanse, like once you get into the world, you want to know the backstory, right? You want to know like, how did we get from where we are now to where these people are in these stories? And just, I feel like in that same vein, they really have something special here. And I hope this continues to be successful for them, because I think it's really good.
Yeah.
I think it's cool that they're such a small studio and being able to keep going on making this world, you know, like it's not like a lot of times I feel like we see one studio make a game and then immediately jump to a new title because they need to kind of like churn out that new thing to keep money coming or like keep growing as a studio. And it's really awesome to see these guys building and taking their time in this world that we all love and we're really into, you know?
Yeah. It's very exciting. I hope they just continue to do things with this, because I think it's really special. So
yeah,
I agree.
Let's, I want to know about this movie. I'm really excited that you saw this.
I'm going to give you, well, so this started out, I'll give you the backstory of why I saw this really quickly. This started out as a joke in the office, because we had a GIF of a farting corpse being used as a jet ski.
Right.
And the GIF is famous now. I think you can see it kind of anywhere. It's Paul Dano riding Daniel Radcliffe, who is a zombie farting in the water like a jet ski with a rope around him, and he's kind of like yelling and screaming. We saw this GIF and we looked up what it was. We were all laughing about it, and we made a pact as a team that we were going to go see this as a team in the movie theater.
Wow.
Because we thought this would be the most ridiculous thing we've ever done. So the movie is, it might be in wider release now. I think it was in limited release this week possibly, but or last week rather. But so we went and saw it. Daniel Radcliffe, I saw a couple of his interviews too, Scott, and I think he said it best. I want to say it was on Seth Meyers, where he tells the premise of the movie where he's like, or Seth Meyers asks about the farting corpse, and he goes, yeah, well, you know, as a person dies, they tend to build up a lot of gas, and, you know, farting corpse is like one of those things, and that is one of the things in the movie, and like half the audience laughed. And half the audience stayed dead silent.
Right.
And Daniel Radcliffe goes, all right, though, that's a good test. So if you were the part of the audience that laughed at that sentence, you should go see this movie. And if you're the part of the audience that didn't laugh, maybe not.
Like, yeah, I really appreciate his British honesty.
Yeah.
Because he basically laid down the gauntlet of who should see the movie and who should not.
It's pretty, well, it got, so the backstory on his, the that is that they took it to, I think, Cannes Film Festival. And or con, whatever you pronounce
Cold.
It. They took it there, and apparently it like straight up divided the critics. And people were like, some people were walking out of the movie.
Awesome.
Other people thought it was great. And it was like such a weird division of likes and dislikes that like they didn't expect it, I guess. You know, they thought either everybody would hate it or everybody would love it. And like a lot of people hated it, but also a section loved it. I really enjoyed this movie. And I'm going to try and tell you what it's about without ruining anything, which I think I can do. Essentially, Paul Dano, it starts out with Paul Dano. He's stuck on this island, and he's like going to kill himself, right? And he says, you know, what else? Like, he's praying to God sort of and saying, like, give me a sign if you don't want me to do this that I shouldn't. But otherwise, like, I'm sort of done. And a couple hijinks happen, and then at the last second, a corpse washes up on the shore, which he doesn't know is a corpse at the time. And he like gets out of the noose that he's in and runs over there. And he sees that it's Daniel Radcliffe. And he starts trying to like wake him up. And then he realizes that he's dead. And then he starts laughing, 'cause he's just like, well, of course, you know, like this is ridiculous. So from there, which this isn't ruining it either, this is the first 5 minutes of the movie, he notices Daniel Radcliffe has a lot of gas in him. And it's starting to like build up in a weird way, and then, you know, a couple of weird things happen, and then he ends up realizing that he can ride him like a jet ski while he farts in the ocean.
So good.
And so he gets on him and he rides him out, and then like kind of falls off, and then you wake up and it's fast forwarded, he's on a new piece of land. And it's really a story about Paul Dano trying to make it back to society. And
it's a buddy movie is what I heard it described as.
It becomes one. So Daniel Radcliffe is literally just a corpse that he's carrying around for the first like 40 minutes of the movie. Like, he doesn't talk. There's nothing's going on. It's just a dead person that Paul Dano is carrying around a forest.
I love it.
And you kind of have to like go with the movie at a certain point. Like, Daniel Radcliffe starts talking, and then it becomes sort of a buddy movie, and it kind of becomes this story about Paul Dano and who he is in the real world, quote unquote,
mm-hmm.
and like what he's trying to get back to, and sort of what friendship is and what love is. Like, it kind of encompasses like these societal norms and whether they should apply to you or not.
Interesting.
If that is interesting at all.
That makes sense. That makes sense.
And then the story kind of expands and gets crazier. It's called Swiss Army Man because throughout the movie, Paul Dano discovers new tricks, quote unquote, that Daniel Radcliffe's corpse can do. And he utilizes them to find his way back to society. Things like he can pull his arm back and then chop stuff in half with his arm, or like break things. He can like jam something inside of him and then pull his leg and fire it out like a gun. It's all batshit crazy, and it just gets crazier. And the best I can say is that when you think you're like, oh, I see what's going to happen. This plus this and XY is going to be Z. They just really jam on that batshit crazy pedal a little harder, and it just goes even more out there. And like, you have to kind of just go with it. And if you don't, then you're going to hate the movie. If you do, you'll come out of it enjoying it for probably multiple reasons. But to me, it really was, I'm trying to talk around it because there's so much weird stuff that happens in the last like third. Really last half, but it never takes a weird turn. It just keeps going weird. Mm-hmm. Like,
uh-huh.
Like, it's not like it's a normal movie. And then, I mean, obviously he's carrying a corpse around for 40 minutes, but it's not like it's like normal things happen. And then all of a sudden, then they get weird and esoteric. It's like, it's just weird. And then it just keeps getting weirder. And then it just continues to be weird until it ends in like a very weird way. But it's super funny, and like, it's weirdly heartwarming and then also disturbing in the same sense. And like, if you can see it, I would definitely recommend seeing it. Whether you want to go spend, you know, $20 in the theater is your call, but it is a really good movie. And the best thing I can say is that A24, who did Ex Machina and a couple other things, it's Danny Boyle's production company.
Mm-hmm.
They're the ones who produced it.
Oh,
so
awesome.
It's kind of got that like quality stamp already on it.
Yeah,
you will.
That totally makes sense.
Yeah. So it like when you see perfectly. The A24, you're like, oh, okay, this is going to be sort of a heady movie about, you know, something bigger than it really seems.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it is a buddy movie, but not in, I think you would look at the beginning and hear the farting corpse bit and think it's a, like a slapsticky buddy movie.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not at all. It is like a Judd Apatow buddy movie mixed with weird, like,
seems like Spike Jonze-y.
Yeah, Spike Jones, or the guy who wrote Being John Malkovich, like that kind of weird movie with like the A24 aesthetic on it. It's a very interesting title. I'm really glad we saw it. The best review I can give is that we all walked out of this movie that we all universally went to because we thought it was gonna be the dumbest thing we've ever seen in our lives, and everybody liked it on the way out of the movie.
Cool.
So there was six of us who were like converted immediately upon seeing it. But it is a really different, it's something. It's really something. So I would say see it if you have any interest at all. If you like A24 films, you'll love it. If you, you know, like farting corpses, you'll be in from the very beginning. And then, yeah, I don't know. Go see it. It's different. It's a unique movie. So
awesome.
I'm in.
Yeah.
The last thing I wanted to talk about was a game that recently came to Xbox and PlayStation that was originally a PC game called Dex. Mm-hmm. And what I was interested in playing this game for was basically the content of the game and the premise of the game. So I got, you know, in full disclosure, I got a review code for the game, and I've played a couple hours of it, but it is a cyberpunk sort of action RPG in like, but it's a 2D game. So it's a 2D action RPG in a cyberpunk universe with sort of different combat mechanics and a, you know, cyberpunk, like a sci-fi story. And the artwork almost reminds me of like a PC game you would have played 20 years ago. And I think
very Blade Runner-esque.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that obviously I'm drawn to any kind of cyberpunk type game, but just the fact that they decided to go with an art style that made the game look like it was like 20 years old, you know, I thought was fairly interesting, because even the art style, you know, you walk past a 2D building and it's like, it could have been something out of Leisure Suit Larry, you know? But it's obviously it's updated for a modern era of gaming. But, I think it's really fascinating for me. It hits all the right notes, almost to the point where its imperfections are endearing to me, if that makes any sense. The, combat mechanics are pretty interesting. They have the main mechanic that you start out with is a melee fighting mechanic, almost like in the style of Double Dragon. So you can do like jump kicks and punch combos and things like that. Eventually you can pick up weapons in the game and fire those, but it's like the firing style where, you know, you go to aim and sort of the aiming line comes out from your character in 2D.
Okay.
And you line it up and shoot at people. And, then there's like a stealth mechanic. So if you choose to kind of try to sneak up on people, you can choke them out from behind and take them out that way. And then the game has a hacking mechanic as well, which, you know, having played a lot of these games, I think is a very sort of different take on how you do hacking in a game. So, you know, probably one of the more recent things I can think of is, like how you would do it in the Shadowrun games that are out right now, where you kind of like go into a computer system and fight enemies like inside of the computer system.
Okay.
This one is different because it kind of like foregoes the whole 2D thing, and it almost puts you into a top down, almost like a Geometry Wars type of mechanic, where you are doing like a dual stick fighting thing to hack different computer systems. Does that make any sense? Cool. What I'm trying to say?
Yeah.
Kinda. Yeah.
Yeah. So like you're doing the 2D, you know, side scrolling fighting thing, and that all makes sense. And then you go to hack something, and all of a sudden it goes from, you know, like visual side scrolling 2D to like a top down 2D perspective. And you're moving like your, I don't know, let's call it your consciousness, for lack of a better word. You're moving your consciousness around on the screen, trying to locate nodes inside the environment that allow you to, you know, disarm security systems or uncover data points or whatever. And then as you're doing this, there are other things sort of floating around on the screen, different types of, I don't know, viruses or anti-hacking, you know, security type measures that are trying to attack you while you are trying to, you know, stay on this node and hack it or whatever. And so all the different enemy types inside of the hacking cyberspace area represent different things and have different ways to attack you. So it's kind of like a weird, that was kind of the most jarring thing about the game, is the first time you see the hacking mechanic and you're like, oh, this is almost like a completely different game that we're playing. And it uses a different, uses like a different health bar. It's like called your focus meter, I think is what it uses. And it's got different, abilities and skills and different ways to upgrade them, which is weird. And, like I said, this being an RPG, there is obviously, you know, some skill building as well. So as you get, experience points, you put them into your character. So in a very sort of, I don't know, what I kept thinking about over and over again is that, like, if Deus Ex were a 2D side-scrolling game, like, it might be a lot like Dex.
Huh.
If that makes any sense.
I'm looking at screens and stuff of it now. It definitely looks, it looks very different.
Like, yeah,
I don't think last game I think that looked like this was a game from like 1990 called Technocop on Sega Genesis.
Yeah. Yeah. I did a little bit of digging into the game. It's like from a studio that I was like not familiar with and I didn't recognize any of their other games, but it seems like this studio just kind of had a vision for what they wanted this game to be and kind of just put it out there, and they're like, hey, this is our game. We're not trying to do this or that. Like, we just made our game, right? It's got sort of a more mature storyline. There are, you know, the dialogue is sort of more on the mature side in the types of things that they talk about. Something else that I'll add is that obviously, you know, there's some good music, and the entire game is completely voiced, which I think is pretty impressive
for, oh, neat.
For like an indie title. Yeah. Like, you know, very, it kind of does that movie thing where you do a little bit of action in the game, then all of a sudden the credits start to roll like in the middle of the game.
Yeah.
And the first thing I noticed was the voice cast, and there were like 3 pages of voice cast. So I think there are maybe 30 different voice actors credited for this game.
Good for them.
Yeah.
That's expansive.
So I think, you know, the amount of effort that, you know, the apparent effort that they put into the game, I think is why I would recommend a game like this, because every single NPC you go to talk to, every quest giver has some, you know, it's voiced, right? And I feel like it's unexpected for a game of this level to have that much voice acting in it. You know, you might expect the main character or the main NPCs to have voices, but like every single person I've spoken to has something to say. So it's never like one of those things where you walk up to like a minor NPC and like their text appears above their head, right? It's not like that.
Yep.
Yeah. So I just think that stuff is really cool. And the way, you know, just the fact that you can choose, you know, this being an RPG with action elements, you can sort of choose how you want to develop your character. So if you want to put all of your points into guns and then go buy some weapons and shoot up the building, you can do that. Or if you want to put all your points into melee and kind of like in endurance and become a tank and just fight your way through things, you can do that too. Or you can disarm security systems and kind of sneak around and be stealthy. So I think that's really interesting. I'll also add that the game, I think, is difficult. Like, you know, so it's challenging, right? The combat is challenging. I would say that the cyberspace mechanic is really what's tripping me up so far in my game. And I'm not sure if it's because I don't have the right skills or if I'm just at that point that you hit in every RPG where it's like you need to reach that tipping point where the game becomes easy, right?
Yeah.
So
and you might have to grind or something.
Yeah. So I've kind of hit that point in the game where like, I really need to decide how I want to play the game. And I don't think it's really to your advantage to spread yourself thin with your skills. But if you specialize, I think it could be a lot of fun. So that's kind of what I'm playing with now. And I'm a few hours into the game, but I think it's really special. I know it's been on Steam for a while and now it's on Xbox One and PlayStation 4. It's called Dex. I think it's going to come to Vita soon. I think PlayStation 4 is getting a physical release and the game is also coming to Wii U. So it's going to be everywhere.
Sounds like another recommend.
Yeah, I think it's recommended just because it is like an indie title that seems to have more polish to it and more like, you know, more effort put into it to a point where I think it elevates above, you know, similar indie titles. Right. And it's pretty unique in itself. So
cool.
Huh.
Yep. So that's Dex. I'll probably have more to say once I complete the game, but so far so good. I think it's a lot of fun. Check it out.
Awesome. Yeah. Awesome.
Michael Bean, and you're listening to the Rated NA podcast.
All right, we are back with our question of the week, and this week we asked you guys, with the success of Pokemon Go, do you feel as though location-based games, AR, are here to stay? If so, what franchise would you love to see embrace the format? And our first response is from Mr. Michael Coles. He says Digimon. No.
Was there... honest old guy question.
Yeah.
Is there a difference? Were they the same? Is it the same company? No, is there a difference between the two?
It's like the GoBots to Transformers.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then there's Yu-Gi-Oh, right?
Which is like Yu-Gi-Oh. Yeah, which is like, yeah, no, not same company.
Okay. Yeah. Old guy question over. Okay.
Different stuff, yeah.
Emily Goodrich at Last of M, The Last of M, says, can you imagine random battle systems IRL, a large Final Fantasy VII RPGs would be crazy with AR/location-based apps?
Oh, man, that could be so crazy.
It would be so disruptive because, like, typically those Japanese JRPG battles take a long time.
Right.
So you have to stand in one place and go through those turns.
All I can picture is like the scene at the end of Anchorman 2 where all the news groups battle in the park.
Yes.
But it'll just be like people standing on their phones looking at each other. Just like 40 people looking at each other on the phones.
Yeah. King Jimmy at... Oh. What did you say?
I just saw his answer. Sorry. Oh.
King Jimmy at Drake Marth says, Yu-Gi-Oh! Go, just for the hell of saying it over and over.
Yu-Gi-Oh! Go.
Do you guys have an answer to this question? I have a couple of answers myself.
I joked around on Twitter about my Mass Effect answer, which would be really pretty easy to do. You know, you could go in different spots and recruit different people, but that was more for like more of a Mass Effect 3 thing. I don't have any idea what Andromeda is about, so I don't know. Somebody gave the answer of a Fallout, and I think that could be really brilliant. Gathering supplies and, you know, and fighting in different locations and like going places and like looking for stuff. And imagine like an AR base where you actually like find loot. Like you have to like go to fucking Whole Foods to find like to find like bullets or something so you can get to the next part of the map.
Yeah.
It'd be so cool, right?
Yeah. How about you, Matt?
This is only based on what we just talked about with your game review you just did.
Okay.
But what if it was like, an AR Blade Runner game where you were, I just blanked on his name, the detective.
Harrison Ford.
Come on, Ash. Yeah, Harrison Ford. What was his character name?
I can't remember right now.
I know. Like, now that you say that, it's gone.
It's completely gone. Anyways, you were him. It's right Rick there.
Deckard.
Yeah. Deckard.
There's actually a Deckard in the game Dex too. So there you go.
Oh, so it is straight. Yeah. And you like walked around and you had this kind of like story being told to you, you know, this like future version of the city you're in, this like, you know, sci-fi future version. And then like in the game through AR, other people that you pass, you could get like alerts that they were cyborg people, which I've blanked the name they're called. They have a special name that is Sims or... Fuck, why am I forgetting everything about Blade Runner right now? Anyways.
Synths.
And you could, like, there would be, like, stories told around real people that you walk by that you'd have to, like, hack or, like, figure out.
Man, and that'd be awesome. That'd be so cool.
That's cool.
Yeah.
I think that would fit in nicely with the Mass Effect game as well, doing something, you know.
Yeah.
The one I had... and it's probably just because it's topical, is Ghostbusters.
Oh, wow.
And the really idea, cool. The idea would be, instead of PvP, it would be a co-op game, right? So
yeah.
Let's say you find a ghost, which would be make sense with your AR device, right? But then like you would need multiple people to add power to your proton packs, right? To capture the ghost. So, you know, maybe some ghosts would require four people to capture, or maybe four people plus a trapper or something like that, right? So that would be sort of the early concept for a Ghostbuster style, you know, location-based game.
It's cool.
That'd be really cool.
I dig it.
Yeah, yeah.
I like it. I guess I'll go next. Ashley Durkin Rixey, who's Ashley DC, says The Sims in your own neighborhood might be neat.
It kind of
sounds very meta.
Like you could just build like virtual things on top in your house.
Yeah, you hold up your phone and there's virtual people standing in your house just doing mundane things.
You can like buy chairs and stuff that don't actually exist in your apartment.
Ah, da.
Wave your talking iPad to you. Around. Look, show speak. People.
Yeah.
Yeah, that'd be amazing.
Oh, man.
Haggis McHaggis at Haggis McHaggis says, I think they'll still be around, but not as big once Pokemon Go loses popularity. Would love to see Mortal Kombat in that format.
Oh, Jesus. Wow. how would that even work?
Maybe you like while you're walking around, you find portals to like the other world or whatever that you fight in.
Outer world
is outer world.
Yeah,
I'm coming real close to everything that I say right now.
Oh yeah, it's not mine. Somebody else.
It's Outworld. Sorry, I got it wrong. I had to double check. Yeah. Elizabeth says Fallout. It could overlay the wasteland over your current view.
Ooh, that would be so cool.
That'd be pretty fun.
That'd be like a totally different sort of experience. Like the whole Pokemon thing is very lighthearted and fun. Like, but imagine Fallout if you encountered other people, you could like steal supplies from them. People would just be like running in circles, trying to hide from each other, looting and pillaging.
It'd be like the Walking Dead. We'd have to watch out for Hillary. Who'd come and steal all of our shit. Yeah.
Don't trust her. So we're done. This is episode 239 of the Rated NA podcast. As always, you can find us on Twitter, and that's at NerdAppropriate. You can send us an email. Please do that. And that's Scott, Matt, or Ash at NerdAppropriate.com. Or if you have a general question, you can email it to nerds@NerdAppropriate.com, and we'll be happy to answer your question or reply on the podcast. We are going to San Diego Comic-Con, and that actually might be our next couple episodes. So it might be SDCC stuff. So we're traveling there next week. There might be a little bit of a delay, but we'll do our best to get these out to you. And sure. We have a Twitch TV channel, which is twitch.tv/nerdappropriate. Go there and, watch us play some games. And then of course we have Facebook/nerdappropriate and we'll be on our Instagram account out at San Diego Comic-Con as well. So follow us, nerdappropriate on Instagram. And we'll take some pictures and share them with you.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Cool. And thank you guys so much for listening. And you guys are the best. And we'll talk to you soon.
Have fun.
Yeah. Do that. I read the one in the doc and not the title in the title.
Yes.
Up in the title, it says the correct number. And then I look at the one that was copy-pasted down the below.
Copy-pasta.